Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mud Toe at Midnight. I'm your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. I'm a medicine man, and my chosen modality is the written and spoken word. My medicine bundle is open. I've lit the incense and offered it to the four directions. I invite you to sit with me in sacred ceremony. If you are an agent of the government, you are, of course, welcome to listen. But bear in mind that the words and actions of the medicine man in ceremony are protected under federal and international law. You can join the conversation by tweeting me at Mudtoe Sasquatch, MudToeSasquatch, or by email at MudToeSasquatch@gmail.com. And now, Mudtoe at Midnight. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate, and wetter and more sticky. I like my women like I like my cola, tall, dark, and cool, with a straw in them. And with that little bit of poetry, welcome to the show. I am Mudtoe Sasquatch, perhaps not as enlightened as you might think, but I am a medicine man, a dealer in the spoken word. And hopefully I will speak some words that mean something to someone tonight. Those last ones probably won't, but you never know. Thank you for joining me here on blogtalkradio.com, the With Insights Radio channel of Blog Talk Radio. And I am joined here on the channel by several other the people, shamans are probably more what you expect. Conventional was the word that leaked to mind, but I don't think that's right. Nobody around here is conventional. But on Monday night, you can hear Iggy Garcia and Rosa Bell. They'll take your phone calls and give you readings over the air. On Tuesday night, Jenny Seek and the Intuitive Voice Hour, which is pretty close to the actual title of that show. I have it written down somewhere. Poor Jenny. Sorry about that. I love you, dear. But I know I keep getting the name of your show wrong, and I'm sorry. But it's on Tuesdays at 7. That's a wonderful program. Wednesdays at noon, I believe, is our newest program, which is the Entrepreneurial Excellence, which for some reason I have no trouble remembering, but I can't remember the name of Jenny's show. The Entrepreneurial Excellence Hour, maybe it is. But that's Heather Tapia's show, and it's just started. Now, I think it's going to be off this next week because Heather is traveling for business, but it will be back the following week. And then Friday nights at midnight, it is Mudtoe Sasquatch. Oh, that's me, here with you, just sharing some words, some syllables, some ideas, get the neurons firing, get the thoughts flowing, get the energy moving, which is, Got no place else to take that thought, so I'll move on. This evening, I was downtown at the very heart, the very center, if you will, of my very large city in the Midwest. And I went there to see a movie. Now, nothing too unusual about that, as you might say, but it was an old movie. We have an old movie house. It was an old Paramount movie house, if that means anything to anybody. Back before the 1950s, the movie studios used to own the movie theaters. So you go to a theater, you would always see movies that were made by the same studio. If you wanted to see something by Paramount, you had to find a Paramount theater. If you wanted to see something by Warner Brothers, you had to find a Warner Brothers theater. And the Supreme Court broke that up sometime in the 1950s, and people could then, our movie theater operators could then pick and choose what movies they wanted to show. A great moment for democracy, I'm sure. But this was an old Paramount theater, and it's just huge. It's 6,200 seats. And it was at a date with The Wrecking Ball. It was scheduled to be disassembled violently. And someone stepped in. I don't know. I used to know the whole story. It's all written down someplace. Somebody stepped in and saved the thing and restored it. And now they operate it as mostly it runs as a live theater, not so much as a movie house. But in the summers, they have a movie series. They bring old movies back and show them on the big screen, which in that place is a huge screen. And I like to support that. I like to see the old movies back in the format in which they were intended to be seen. So tonight I went and I saw Casablanca. And I don't know that Casablanca really gains that much from being projected on a big screen, because it was before they had widescreen and all of that. And it's not a particularly, I mean, there's not a lot of action in it. But, and also for me, I had already seen Casablanca on a big screen once. I saw it for the first time on a big screen when I was an undergraduate here in this very same very large city in the Midwest. There used to be a theater on campus that showed old movies, and it is now long defunct. There's a, I believe it's Arabic. Is Arabic, is there such a thing as Arabic food? Mediterranean food, maybe? Palestinian food? Something along those lines. There's a restaurant in there now where the old movie house used to be. I saw Casablanca and the Maltese Falcon on a double bill. And that was a lot of fun. I saw Casablanca again at the big movie house downtown. It's right across from, well, I shouldn't say that. I know it's totally useless, but I try and maintain some semblance of anonymity because I talk about the 12 steps sometimes. So I try scrupulously to not give away too many clues as to where I live, and sometimes I slip up. I know at least twice I have said the name of my city that I live in, and I know at least once I've said the name of the university where I work, but you won't catch me on that one. You may catch me later on. You may catch me later in the show. Say it, but I'm not going to say it tonight. Well, anyway, it's downtown. It's like very right in the center of town is where this theater is, and it's just a gorgeous old place. I went there. This is the first show of this season, and they have a big pipe organ, and a guy, I don't know where the pipes are, but the guy, you know, comes up out of the floor playing the organ, and he plays, you know, a program of music before the show. Then he picks up his microphone, he makes whatever announcements need to be made, and then he goes back into the floor, and they show the movie. And at intermission, he comes and plays again. Now, Casablanca doesn't have an intermission, so what they did was they just stopped the movie in the middle, and because they want people to go out and buy the overpriced popcorn and pop and everything. In this case, it goes for a good cause. I mean, everything they do during the summer movie series, it supports the theater. It supports keeping all this going. And the organ player told us that this is it's the longest-running, you know, summer movie series of this kind, you know, classic movies, old movies, in the world. And the theater has been showing this summer movie series has been going on for longer than the place was a conventional theater back in from the 20s until the 50s. So it's an interesting cultural find, and the place was packed. The place was packed tonight, 6,200 seats. There were a few empty, you know, seats on the sides. So I'm at least 5,000, probably more than that, in there for Casablanca tonight. And then they all leave at the same time and try and get their cars out of the underground parking garage. I didn't drive. I went on the city bus. And that presents its own problems because around that time, late at night, they have what they call the lineup, which again is right there in the center of town, and all the buses that are running at that time, they stop and they line up for some purpose which I don't begin to understand. I mean, they don't make everybody get off, so they're not cleaning them. I've sat on the buses all through the lineup before. They don't do anything. I don't know what it's all about. They don't change drivers. So anyway, you sit there for a few minutes, and then they let you go, and you all go take off like this big bus cavalry charge, except it's single file, like the sand people. We ride single file to hide our numbers. You can tweet me if you remember what movie that's from. Well, anyway, I was sitting on the bus. I arrived. My point in telling you all this is that I arrived at the bus stop right at lineup time. So I got on the bus, and there's no driver on the bus. There was one as I arrived, and I swiped my student ID card that lets me get on the buses for free still. And I sat down, and then the driver got up and got off the bus and was off the bus for several minutes. And during that time, people were getting on the bus. And I was just making a note, you know, with no driver sitting there, how many of them were actually going to pay the fare. There's nobody watching them, you know, nobody forcing them to do it. I presume the driver wasn't standing right outside the bus and watching people get in. Maybe he was. I don't know. But I kept count, and 11 people got on the bus. during the lineup, and 10 of them paid. 10 of them paid, and one of them blew it off. So that gave me a little jolt of faith in the... I was going to say jolt of faith in humanity, not humanity per se, in the... I guess in a sort of moral development of humanity that I think is very much lacking. I think it's I read a lot of these debates. I've only seen one. I've read about a lot of them. Debates between atheists and devout Christians, and one of the arguments of the devout Christians is that humanity needs God because without God we wouldn't have a moral compass. We wouldn't have any way of knowing what's right or wrong, and that put me in mind of someone named Kohlberg. What was Kohlberg's first name? Aaron? Alan? Arnon? I don't know, but Kohlberg was a dude. This is one of the things that's made the heaviest impression on me of all the things that I've learned in my graduate school experience was about Kohlberg and his stages of moral development. Now, if there are any Kohlberg experts out there already, you may Twitter me and critique my description of Kohlberg's theory in 140 characters or less, of course. And I would be very interested in hearing that. But what Kohlberg, as I understand it, what he said is that moral development in human beings can be expressed as a series of four stages. And they're kind of nesting stages. They sort of build on one another. And the first... So people, like, if you look at it in a child development perspective, there are, you know, certain the children go through these stages as they develop into it. And it has to do with the choices that you make, choices that involve making a determination between right and wrong. Okay, something is right, therefore I do it. Something is wrong, therefore I refrain from doing it. So it sort of assumes an emotionally healthy person who, you know, whose brain is working in the quote unquote proper way, in a way, you know, sort of I think proper actually might be a good term to use there. You know, someone who's not antisocial. You know, we're not talking about axe murderers here. We're talking about people with a fairly decent. I do not multitask well. A tweet came up, and I had to look, and that made me stop talking. Very sorry about that. So we're talking about Kohlberg. Four stages. The first stage is, because I'm working without notes today, so bear with me while I dig through my memory. The first stage is response to stimuli. Okay, this would be like a baby or a toddler would work at this level. That tastes good. You know, I'll eat more of that. Ouch, that burns. I won't touch that anymore. And it's just your determination of what you're going to do, what you're not going to do, what's right to do, what's wrong to do, is based purely on the information that's coming to you at the moment. You know, there's no calculation. There's no referral to memory. It's just, you know, whatever information is that's coming in right now, that's how I decide what I'm going to do, what I'm not going to do. Okay, so that's stage one. Stage two is rewards and punishments, which is, you know, as you say, similar. It's building on the first one, but there's more to it. Rewards and punishments has to do with some cognition, some thinking. If I do this thing, if I clean my room, I'll get my allowance. You know, so you're talking of older children now. If I sneak out, you know, if I stay out too late tonight, I'll get grounded, so I won't do it. So your choice between right and wrong is conditioned by the rewards you get for doing right things and the punishments you might get for doing wrong things. That's stage two, rewards and punishments. Stage three is adherence to a moral code. I do this because God says I should. The book says I should. Allah says I should. There's a list of do's and don'ts, and I choose to adhere to those do's and don'ts. Whatever the list is and whoever it is that's responsible for them, this is the list that I recognize, and this is what I go by. So again, it's building on that thing about rewards and punishments. It's not so much that I'm necessarily going to be rewarded for not cheating on my wife. It's just I do it because the book says I'm not to cheat on my wife. I won't necessarily be rewarded for, or I won't necessarily be punished for stealing. You know, if I don't get caught, I won't get punished if I don't get caught. But there's something in the code that says don't steal because it's wrong, and there's an implied punishment for stealing even if you're not punished at the human level. You'll be punished supernaturally at a later level by a deity or perhaps by your own conscience. You know, you won't be able to live with yourself because of what you did. So that's stage three, adherence to a moral code. Now, stage four it's a little bit more difficult to explain because it's very similar to stage three. I think it's only subtly different. And that is adherence to an absolute moral code, which is I don't steal because it's wrong. Okay? It's not I don't steal because God said not to. It's I don't steal because it's just wrong to steal. Nobody had to tell me that it was wrong. I believe that it's wrong, therefore I don't steal. I believe that it's wrong to kill people, therefore I don't kill people. I believe that it's the right thing to do to help people, so I do that. And there's no deity standing behind me, cracking the whip, as it were, to make sure I do right and do wrong. And the devout Christian's argument holds true if our society is dominated by people who are at stage three or less, rather than people who are at stage four. People at stage four recognize that there's a morality that supersedes codes, that there are certain things that are right no matter what, certain things that are wrong no matter what, and that those things are fundamental things. You know, they're not small things. They're not things that... It's easy to take absolute rights and absolute wrongs and twist them to suit one's own purposes or to disadvantage everyone else. That's not what this is about. This is a set of a very basic, very seminal codes that it's very hard to argue with. You know, it's don't kill, don't steal, don't have inappropriate sexual relations. Inappropriate meaning maybe not necessarily the traditional definition is only with your wife, but if you're like me and you don't particularly believe in marriage, it would be sexual relations that aren't consensual, let's say. One-up kind of relationships where you're the boss and you're taking advantage of someone else. I don't know why I got stuck on sex here. I guess it's something that happens. I'm trying to illustrate that difference between four and three, and that the argument between devout Christian and atheist comes down to how many fours are out here as opposed to ones, twos, and threes. And I'd be interested in hearing anyone within the sound of my voice, if you want to send me a tweet on my Twitter or tweet on my tweeter, whatever it is. It's that ampersand and MUDTOESASQUATCH, and I will see what you had to say. You can also email me. I believe I said all this in the introduction, but it's a pre-recorded introduction. I don't listen to it very closely. But I do have a Gmail account, mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com, if you can't express your thoughts in 140 characters or less. Actually, it's fewer. I'm trying to get away from that, too. The whole... Now, see, the next thing. I keep running into things that I don't want to say anymore. I don't want to say grammar Nazi anymore because I think the thing you're talking about needs to be pretty doggone important before you invoke the name of Nazis. I just don't think grammar is that important. People who bug people because of their grammar, I don't think rises to the level required to refer to them as Nazis. So I see people who have a grammar obsession would worry about my saying whether something, because if it's a counting noun, it's fewer. If it's a collective noun, it's less. So what was I saying? If it's something, it'd be fewer characters. That's right. Characters are something you can count. So it would be fewer characters as opposed to less characters. Less would be like water. Water is a collective. You don't count water. There's just water, you know. unless you're in a restaurant, then I guess there could be four waters, which is really short for four glasses of water. And the glass is not waters. But if you're talking about water, you're not, you don't have nine waters, you just got water. And that would be less water, as opposed to fewer water. Okay. Huh. Boy, I think I've covered a wide range of topics people really aren't going to care about this evening. I do depend on your tweets and your emails to sort of keep me pointed in a direction of things you might like to hear about. And in the absence of those things, I just have to just sort of sit here and think of things. So if there's something else you'd like to hear about, please let me know. I'm more than happy to let you know the correct answer. No, I'd let you know what I think, which is just what I think. It's not the correct. There is no correct answer is the correct answer. And the only thing that never changes is the doctrine that everything changes. But anyway, actually it's dharma, not doctrine. I'm messing up my quotes too. You know, the only other thing I had in my mind definitely to talk about today was Floyd Mayweather, and I've got to get his story up here on the internet, if it will come for me. First of all, to make sure that I said his name right. He's a boxer, rather famous boxer, and he got into some trouble. Floyd Mayweather, what did I say? Did I say Floyd Mayweather? I don't even remember. I'll have to go back later and listen, okay? Floyd Mayweather, he is a boxer. A pretty famous one, and he did something bad. He beat up his wife, beat her up pretty badly, and did it in front of their kids. And so they sent him to jail. They gave him 90 days, which actually was shortened to 87 days because he was in jail for 3 days waiting for something else. Like when they arrested him, he was in jail for 3 days before he got bailed out. And evidently, you know, so Mr. Mayweather is in jail. Well, he got a delay, first of all, because he had a big fight to fight. And so, you know, I think if I had to go to work, they probably wouldn't. Well, maybe they would. I don't know. Suppose it depends. But the judge said, okay, well, you don't have to go to jail right away until after this fight. So he went in to jail after his fight, and that was about like 10 days ago. And now Mr. Mayweather isn't enjoying it in jail, and he would like to be released to house arrest. Apparently his problems are he doesn't like the food, he doesn't like the water. They're giving him tap water instead of bottled water, and he doesn't have enough room to exercise properly. And this has created concern from his lawyers, his trainers, his doctors, and various other hangers-on, that perhaps this stay in jail will deteriorate him so much because he's not exercising and he's not eating that he will not be able to fight again, and that therefore the conditions of his imprisonment constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. So they made a motion to try and get him put on house arrest for the remainder of his 90 days. And as I'm describing this to you, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. It wasn't that it so much struck me funny. I don't know at all. What is it that there? I felt some sort of connection with the guy. I think that's probably the way I would feel if I was in jail. That I didn't deserve this. I mean, jail isn't it a place that's supposed to be unpleasant? I mean, isn't it a place one wants to avoid going? Where am I? Where am I and Mr. Mayweather? We're somewhere. Floyd and I are together somewhere. I'm feeling this. And I'm not finding it. I'm not finding the words for it. I mean, I don't know whether I'm supposed to have words for Floyd or whether I'm supposed to be inspired by Floyd to have words for you that will be helpful in some way. I'm not getting the coda. I'm not getting, you know, what is the, there was this thing, oh, you need to talk about this. Guy's in jail and he's making a bid to get out, which I think, you know, anyone would do if they had access to lawyers and doctors and trainers who are willing to make themselves look sort of ridiculous in order to try and, you know, get you out of jail. If I had that sort of manpower at my disposal, I think I would use it. What do you think? Would you use it, or would you just you do the time like a man and get out after 90 days and get on with your life? So no, never personally experienced jail. Seemed like a very definite possibility at one time. This is something I know I was thinking about when I first read it, because I got a call. I had gotten into a situation, I don't really remember it. I was in traveling for business, and I woke up in a hotel not knowing, you know, I hadn't intended to stop in this place. And then I woke up in this hotel, and I couldn't remember what I had done the night before. So I went home, and a couple of days later, I had a call on my answering machine from the sheriff's department in this place where I was, asking me then to give them a call back. And I said, oh, God, what the hell did I step into? And then evidently walk away from. And I never called them. I never called them back. You know, I went and I looked over my car to see if maybe I'd run somebody over. You know, and it wasn't anything like, oh, I didn't find any evidence of that anyway. So I never called them back, and they never called me back. And, you know, I waited rather anxiously for various, what's it called? When they can't, time goes by and they can't arrest you anymore. Statute of limitations. You know, I kept, well, this is, if it was this whatever thing, you know, if I, well, not to go into specifics, but, you know, if I did this particular thing, the statute of limitations is 4 years. If I did this, it's 6 years. And I'm ticking off as each of these things, you know, I'm in the clear on each of these things. And not too long after that, I was getting ready to go, this is actually last year, I was getting ready to go to a 12-step convention, a national convention, and I was looking over the schedule of meetings. Of course, there's a very full schedule of sessions and 12-step meetings. I was noticing that some of the meetings were marked for level 2 and level 3, and I didn't know quite what that meant. So I talked to someone a little bit more senior than I was and asked him, and he said level 2 and level 3, that means that's for offenders. That's for people who have committed crimes in the midst of their addiction. And level 2 is like sort of like property crimes, and level 3 would be crimes against people. Like level 2 is they stole something, but level 3 would be armed robbery, or they beat somebody up, or whatever. So, and they have special meetings for them because of there's increased concerns over anonymity. So they like to have just, if someone's going to you know, be out there with the fact that they're level 2 or level 3, they like to be just those people in the room. And I kind of smiled and I said, well, I guess I don't have to worry about those. And he said, why not? I said, I mean, you've told me some of your history. And I said, well, you know, I never got arrested. You know, I never went to jail. And he said, well, what difference does that make? And I couldn't think of a good answer. Well, certainly, I risked jail. But, I mean, is jail the important thing, level 2? Or is it the fact that, you know, I was worried about perhaps divine retribution or eating myself alive personally, level 3? Or is it that I shouldn't have done these things no matter what? You know, it's not whether or not I get punished or whether or not God or human authority told me I shouldn't do it. It's about whether it's right or whether it's wrong. So somehow I managed to tie that whole mess of stuff together, sort of. And we're in our final minutes, so I want to thank you for listening. I invite you to come back again next week at this same time. Please, again, once more, I beg you, Twitter me, follow me on Twitter. I've got 10 followers. I'd set a record with 11. Now it's dropped back to 10. And mostly they're just people who send me spam. So for God's sakes, I want some real people. Please follow me on Twitter. Tweet me with what you want to hear on this show. Email me with what you want to hear on this show. I beg you, get in contact with me somehow, please. Love to all. Thanks for listening to the show. And I will talk to you next week. Bye now.